What is the opposite of social media? A social life. I'm Sky Nell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we are going to look at the damage being done when you replace actual human interaction with online interactions, and if social media companies should be held accountable for any damage being done by their users. Let's get started. I will be the first to admit, I can get lost for hours in the various social media platforms now available. In post-pandemic life, you would think people would be excited to get back out and have human interactions. However, it seems just the opposite has occurred, as what started out as an industry with only a handful of businesses now boasts over 128 different platforms available to users around the world. In 2005, the Pew Research Center began tracking adoptions of social media platforms, with only 5% of adults using at least one platform. Well, as of January 2023, there were 5.16 billion internet users worldwide, which is 64.4% of the global population. Of this total, 4.76 billion, or 59.4% of the world's population, were social media users. But the numbers don't stop rising, as most people don't just use one platform. In fact, on average, social media users average 6.6 different platforms and spend 2 hours and 31 minutes daily on social media. While those numbers might be impressive, as any industry would welcome that kind of traffic, the continuing discussion as to what negative effects social media has on mental health of individuals at any age has grown from possible to confirmed. Scientists have even concluded dopamine, the chemical in the brain which signals a reward to the body, is released following certain aspects on social media. This same result is triggered by those who like chocolate, who have their first puff on a cigarette for a smoker, or excitement at instantly winning at a slot machine. This can be extremely addicting to any individual, regardless of their self-discipline. But just like with almost everything else you come in contact, too much of something can turn into a bad thing. And in a non-perfect world, social media has become an effective weapon, which some say can do as much damage to a person, a family, a community, and a society as a gun. So joining me now to discuss is Lisa Palmer Olson, a licensed marriage and family therapist in San Diego, California. Now, she's also a certified EFT therapist, trainer, and supervisor, and founder and one of the directors of the Emotionally Focused Couples Training and Research Institute at Alliant International University. Thank you for joining us, Doctor. Is it fair to put all of the blame on the decline of mental health on social media, or is this just a scapegoat?
Obviously, it's not fair to put all the blame, because I think people really have to take personal responsibility. That's something that's definitely lacking, is that personal responsibility. But we have to understand that social media is everywhere and people are with their phones. They literally sleep with their phones. So it's the first thing that they look at when they wake up in the morning, social media oftentimes, and the last thing that they look at when they go to sleep at night. So we can't underestimate the power of it.
There have been many challenges which have produced bad results, like the drinking challenge, which sent 28 kids from the University of Massachusetts to the ER. But it also has found to be an excellent and economical way to spread the message about events or movements, and is a handy resource for people who are homebound to still interact with the outside world. So, Doctor, do the negatives outweigh the positives regarding social media?
I think it can go in either direction. Definitely social media can be very positive. There's a lot of people out there putting out positive messages of inspiration, but oftentimes it is used negatively, and some people don't even realize that they're using it in that particular way. And a lot of younger people in our generation are absolutely being influenced by social media and the negative messages of social media. And oftentimes they don't even realize what's going on, and it is having an effect on their mental health.
You know, some would say all of these mental health issues have always existed, but social media has just made it able to identify and more acceptable to talk about. Do you agree?
I feel that a lot of people, especially the young people, are having social anxiety types of issues, and they're recognizing that it's become a lot more prevalent. And I do believe a lot of it has to do with the pressures of social media and the images that they're comparing themselves to other people, and also not being able to form relationships, interpersonal relationships. A lot of people, again, you know, they have a relationship with their phone, they have a relationship with video games, they have a relationship with virtual reality, but when it comes to the relationship with others in real life, they're having difficulty with that, as well as more conflicts toward themselves, like really not knowing who they really are as people.
How has social media changed the way people interact with each other in person?
Well, we always have to go back to your relationship to yourself within yourself. And a lot of people are lacking self-awareness. A lot of their focus is on images and culture and whatever is outside of them to try to make themselves feel better about themselves within. And a lot of people are realizing that that is not the way to go about feeling good about yourself. And a lot of people are really confused. And I think it kind of goes back to inner awareness and having to build your strengths from within yourself and realizing that, you know, social media and those types of platforms can be used for the positive, but a lot of times they're not. And so you really have to seek ways to enhance your self growth in a positive way.
This generation has grown up on social media. Everything in their life is shared for the world to see, all in attempts to go viral. Are we seeing this bleed out into real life, where people are just oversharing now to complete strangers on the street?
Such a good question, because I think that the line between what's real and what isn't real has become completely blurred, where a lot of people, especially those in the younger generation, they see that how they're presenting themselves or what they see on social media is real. And the reality is, a lot of people are out there trying to make money through social media. So they're doing a lot of exhibitionistic and in some cases grotesque acts just to make a living. And a lot of the younger generation thinks that this is perfectly okay because, hey, money is money. And I don't really, you know, have a real relationship to fans or to however they're making this money through social media. But in reality, it is affecting their mental health, and it's changing the way that they think about themselves or self-esteem. And at the end of the day, they have to, you know, go home and face themselves.
Thank you, Dr. Lisa Palmer. Stick around. This seems like a great opportunity to take a break, because when we come back, I want to ask if Dr. Palmer thinks in the future, could we see social media companies be held liable for damages, just like gun manufacturers are being held liable for mass shootings?
In 1935, fascist Italy, led by dictator Benito Mussolini, decided to expand its colonial empire in Africa and take over Ethiopia. By that time, Ethiopia was the only fully independent state on the continent. Back in 1896, its inhabitants were able to defeat the Italian colonists and defend their independence. Since then, Rome craved for revenge for the humiliating defeat. In the morning of October 3, 1935, without any announcement, the fascists attacked Ethiopia and bombarded it most severely. Ethiopian armed forces fought courageously, but the brutality of the Italians knew no bounds. They used not only massive bombing attacks on civilians, but also chemical weapons, toxic gases. This changed the course of the war. As a result of the occupation of Ethiopia by the fascists, 760,000 people were killed. The capture of the African state was committed with Europe's tacit approval. Britain and France recognized the annexation, giving the green light to further fascist expansion in the world and paving the way for the outbreak of World War II.
Woo-hoo! Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Memory loss is unusual forgetfulness, a form of memory loss is inability to recall past events. It can be general or concern some specific events only. In some cases, the memory loss can extend back decades. Start an intensive course of memory recovery on RT.
We are back discussing social media and the effects it has on mental health. This is with our guest, Lisa Palmer Olson, a licensed marriage and family therapist in San Diego, California. She is a certified EFT therapist, trainer, and supervisor, and founder and one of the directors of the Emotionally Focused Couples Training and Research Institutes at Alliant International University. Thanks for joining us. There is a lot of focus on social media and mental health for young people, but what about those who are middle-aged? What are we finding to be the effects on the mental health of those maybe in their 30s, their 40s? Are there less negatives?
Well, I definitely think that being in the 30s and 40s and being affected by social media is a real thing, because let's face it, a lot of images on social media are Photoshopped. There's a lot of young people posting images, and somebody who's in their 30s and 40s and they're part of the aging process, ageism is a real thing. And you look at these images and you say, like, well, I don't really look like that, and I really want to look younger. And it goes back again to not accepting yourself, or maybe not feeling that you're good enough. And younger people struggle with that too, but maybe they're also struggling with not feeling good enough in their careers, or not feeling like they're measuring up, and they're comparing themselves to TikTok influencers who are making multi-millions of dollars and living this glamorous lifestyle. And they're going, well, but that's not how it's actually happening for me. So they're comparing their lives in reality to their images online. And a lot of times there's a huge discrepancy there that does affect their self-esteem. A lot of people are going to their plastic surgeons and saying, hey, I want to look more like my filter. And so that is a thing, you know, and people are kind of getting sick of paying for their Facetune filters and saying, why can't I look more like this? So I think the idea of how someone is supposed to look is sort of changing, because everything is seen through a filter and not really seen through reality. And then we're talking Botox, we're talking fillers, we're talking the Kardashians and figures that have appeared to look perfect in their own ways. And you're going, well, wait a minute, that's not really how I look naturally. So you're absolutely affecting people's self-esteem and causing a lot of people to want to make those physical changes.
What role does smartphones have in this? Would there be a difference if social media was only accessible on a desktop, therefore limited, versus always being available in the palm of your hand?
Well, smartphones are actually real estate. I look at them as real estate because everybody has one. And a desktop, you know, you can leave your computer, you can walk away. You don't really walk away from your smartphone. A lot of people don't turn their smartphones off typically. So your smartphone is always with you. And again, it could be used for the positive or the negative, but I don't think we can really discount the power of a smartphone, the power of an app. I mean, I'm developing an app. My app's going to be positive, very inspirational for people, but there's a lot of applications out there that really are not positive for people. And I think people have to take responsibility for their own self, their own mental health, and make better choices to decipher what's going to be good for them and what isn't when it comes to use of their smartphone.
You know, in a time when gun manufacturers are being held accountable for crimes committed with their products, do you think it would be good for technology companies or the social media platforms to be held liable for the damage being done by their products?
Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting question. I mean, I think there can come a time for anything. I definitely think that companies need to take responsibility for their own morale and everything else when it comes to what it is that they're publishing for the general public to realize their influence on people. And it really comes down to whatever their mission and their purpose is. Unfortunately, there's people and their companies out there that really don't care about anything but what goes in their pocket and in their buck. And I think at the end of the day, the viewer, the audience, the person has to take responsibility for their own wellness and mental health to make better decisions for themselves regardless. So that could apply to any area of their life. They could go to a bar and drink alcohol, or they could choose not to. And it all comes down to a personal choice.
Is the discussion about social media and mental health only happening in Western developed countries, or are we seeing it in places that are more traditional around the globe?
Well, obviously, I live here in America, so I'm mostly exposed to America. I do work with patients globally, and I could tell you that this is a global issue because smartphones are global. Mostly everybody has a smartphone, but you do see in a lot of other cultures where there is more of a sense of community and where maybe they are organizing differently around circumstances and some unfortunate circumstances of the culture, that they have a greater sense of inner peace, inner wholeness, community. And those particular aspects of the person and of the culture do kind of help the individuals of that culture to become more adaptable to negative circumstances because they're dealing with it from a more positive perspective. So a lot of it has to do with how you think about what's happening around you. So I do kind of feel that when people are more united as a community, that there's a lot of power in that. And I mean real face-to-face interactions. What you see here a lot, and I hear a lot about this from, you know, especially from my patients, is there's a huge amount of isolation. And the more people are depressed or the more they're anxious, there's more of a tendency toward isolation. And we saw that with the pandemic. People kind of, isolation became normalized during the pandemic. So when people got out of the pandemic, they almost didn't know how to socialize. But Western culture, just in general, we promote independence in the first place, whereas a lot of other cultures, they have a bit more of a community. There's still that getting together with family or helping each other out and seeing your neighbors and knowing your neighbors, and maybe they're grouping when it comes to prayer or even religion or spirituality or helping each other, right? So there is probably a lot more of that that I see in other cultures versus sort of this independent mentality that we see more of here, I would say, in America.
Whistleblowers have come out and said TikTok has specifically set algorithms in Western countries all to spread these dangerous trends like eating Tide Pods, choking challenges, Borgs, and spreading videos of depression and suicide. Where in China, the algorithm is set to spread videos on TikTok that are more educational. Knowing this is the number one app kids are using all over the world, does this raise concerns?
It does, because when you're talking about an online application that so many people have access to and that they're being influenced by, and it's literally something that they're watching before they go to bed at night and when they wake up in the morning at the times where their brainwaves are most susceptible and most influenced, it does kind of raise concern if a lot of those messages may be negative and may normalize negativity. So of course that's going to be a concern. And again, it goes back to people having to wake up and take responsibility for themselves. Certainly companies should have a moral fabric about them and be aware of what it is that they're putting out there to the public. But people have to take a personal responsibility for themselves at the end of the day, phones or no phones. They have to look deep within themselves and say, how am I feeling? You know, am I happy with where I am? And am I seeing myself from a strength-based perspective? And if the answer is no, and they feel that any platform may be affecting them, then they kind of need to detox from it and take a better look at themselves and make some changes.
Should governments impose limits just like they do with alcohol? Or is it too late to try and reverse something which already plays such a large role in society?
I mean, it's a really good question. I personally hate the idea of the government intervening in freedom and people's rights, but government intervenes all the time. I mean, you can't drive 90 down a 30 mile an hour zone, right? And government, you know, they are setting certain standards and principles. They'll get, hey, you have to pay your taxes on time and you have to do this and that. And, you know, in some cases, rules are good. In some cases, rules do go too far. But when you consider the fact of, okay, should government intervene in how much alcohol is served at a bar, people who don't have a drinking problem will say, hey, no, I want to just be able to have as many as I can, and there's a limit. But when you consider that, oh, the alcoholic who goes into a bar and they don't stop and they have a problem, maybe there should be a limit because then they're putting someone else in danger. So I really kind of flip-flop both sides. And at the end of the day, I think people's safety is going to be the most important thing in both sides of the spectrum, because when you have someone who has a genuine problem, they really can't stop their problem. And a lot of times they can't even afford treatment, because treatment for them could be, you know, $60,000 a month plus. So I think that the government maybe in certain cases should look at some areas to intervene, and not because they want to impinge on, you know, people's freedoms, but actually looking at freedom from the opposite side to say, how can we keep everybody safe?
So, Lisa, I have to ask you, how do you help people disconnect more from social media?
Well, for everybody, it's a little bit different, but there are some things that are the same, which is that you have to reconnect to yourself and build upon some of your coping skills and your core belief systems and really start building that up. But like anything, you have to actually reprogram your brain. And when you start to get used to being safe, just being alone, you can slowly build confidence by slowly exposing yourself to society, to situations, you know, little by little by little. And unfortunately, you know, we have to sometimes step outside of the box of comfort in order to achieve the goals that we want to achieve and take some risks. And it's interesting, a lot of people, as much as they know that they may need to take risks in certain areas, they're afraid of failure, and they're afraid of, in some cases, they're also afraid of their own success. But we have to be able to take those risks and take small but, you know, significant steps toward where we want to go, and realize, hey, you know, it's okay to feel a little bit uncomfortable. But as we get used to each situation and as we expose ourselves a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, we realize that it's okay. And most of the time we realize, I can do this.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Lisa Palmer. You know, social media is not going away anytime soon. Therefore, problems which have emerged as a result are just going to have to be dealt with. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.